Welcome to Spy Satellites, a podcast about Dune Imperium and the people who play it. I'm your host, CJ, and this is Rotation 7, where we're talking about the brand new standalone version of Dune Imperium that was just announced called Uprising. So join us for a roundtable discussion focusing on cards, combos, atomics, and everything spice. If you like what we do, please give us a like and subscribe, and if you'd like to support us, you can do so on Patreon at patreon.com/hiddenassets. Supporting us helps us continue to produce quality content and gives you access to some pretty awesome perks, including voting for the upcoming podcast topic. So tell your friends and let us know how we're doing. We're always trying to improve the quality of our content, and we can't do it without you, the listener. Joining me today is the one and only Black Shadow. How are you doing today, Black Shadow?
We're okay. We're coming off the back of a few days of self-imposed exile from everything forever. I've not missed any important news or anything while I've been gone, by any chance.
No. Yeah. No. Nothing. Not at all. Not a new game. Not anything. No.
Yeah. I thought we were coming here to talk about all sorts of bits and pieces. Maybe a Nemesis. Maybe what was that betting game we played when I was over in Seattle?
Which one?
The Egyptian one.
Ra.
That's it. Everyone talks about Ra. Everyone go play Ra. Ra is great entertainment. No, obviously that's not why we're here.
No. Today we're going to be talking about the brand new standalone version of Dune Imperium called Uprising, which will release later this year from Direwolf Digital. It sports a ton of stuff, which we're going to get to here in a second, but some of the main things here, one of the things that makes me most excited is a 6-player mode, which we're going to save that for another podcast because we have a lot to say about multiplayer. But today we're just going to talk about generally some of the other things that we noticed. We're going to be going through the page here from Direwolf and just kind of perusing things. And I want to hear what you have to say, about this new edition, whether it's something you were expecting or is something completely off base.
It was. First of all, hi, Mr. Denon. How are you doing? Good to see you. Hope you had a good time. I should have expected something to come out with Gen Con. They were doing a big tourney there as well, with Dune Imperium stuff, so I shouldn't be too surprised. I don't want to say I told you so, and I don't think I can quite officially say that I told people so, but I have, obviously this came up in discussions in the past couple of streams about the expansion. We knew there was something in the works, just didn't know quite what, and I'd kind of speculated on it. I was going to do a video, if we heard nothing, next week anyways, that, to be honest, they'd already done so much, all they could really do was either just a little bit of like some meters and some cards, or basically a complete board rework, and that is exactly what we have seen. Dune Imperium Uprising, beautiful box, by the way, absolutely love it, looks amazing.
Amazing, the art on the box is just gorgeous. If you're watching this on YouTube, I will have a picture of the box up there. If you are listening to this on our podcast, then please go to direwolfdigital.com, take a look at it, just absorb it. Yeah. It's just wonderful.
All the better boxes I've seen in some time. The art in this game has always been really good anyways, and continues to improve, I think, as well. But anyways, getting back to it. So yeah, I was pretty sure if we were going to have anything big, it was going to be just a complete board rework. I had been chatting and kind of joking about Dune Imperium 2.0 possibly being a thing. I don't know if I quite call this that. I think this is more like Dune Imperium 1.5, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. In 2.0, this is like a complete ground-up restart. This is not quite that. Obviously, there's a lot of the same sort of premise and the same basic mechanics with combat and agent placement and board space, that sort of thing. But outside of that, a lot is going to be changed, clearly. And I think, from what little we know and what I've seen, I think it's going to largely be for the better. It looks to be, for me, like it's going to be a very busy game. There is a lot going on. Even you just look at the promotional shot of like the board, there are just symbols absolutely everywhere. Some we recognize, some we don't. There's obviously going to be an inclusion of like new kind of mechanics bits on the side. And obviously we've got to remember there is a world without, you know, shipping and all that sort of thing, which we're going to have to try and re-remember here. Right. I think it's going to be a pretty busy experience is my initial take on it. I think it could be quite action heavy, judging from the fact that there is obviously more going with combat. There's like extra bits and pieces going on by looks of it as well. The cards, by just a rough sample, looks like the cards will be very busy, even if you think some of the starter cards, we'll go into that in a moment. There is a lot going on, but maybe that's an attempt to just try and make the beginning of the game a bit more diverse, which of course, as we, you know, we've played like thousands and thousands of games amongst our community, it does start to struggle on that a little bit. I don't think you can go quite modular in the experience, but this might be a decent halfway house of doing so. So, you know, but on the just as a TLDR, it looks pretty good. It looks pretty good.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm very excited. I think this looks about as good as I could imagine a reworking of Dune Imperium to look. And I want to say, like, you were right. You were saying you've been going on for a while about Dune Imperium 2.0, that they just, you know, a whole new board would be probably your choice for what to do. And I think you hit it on the head, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty accurate. I mean, tell me what genie you've been palling up with to
it's all that melange, man. It's all that melange I've been having the past few days. No. the truth is that if you think where we were with the original baseboard, and you think to where we're at with the expansions, there wasn't really much left to change. You'd already changed the Lantra Council. You already changed Chome shipping. You'd already changed city spaces. You've already added the negotiators for Ix. You've already added the Talaxu board. Like, the only things you could change was the base board spaces, which you can't really do. It's kind of baked into the game as it was. Or, like, my two guesses were going to be either you add a third faction space, which would have been messy, but you could perhaps have done. Or I thought they were going to do some kind of like modular, like leader add-ons, like maybe something on the side. I don't know. But neither of them really seemed to make sense. The only thing I could think they were ever going to do was just a rework of the board. It's the only thing that made sense to me. And so while I will sit here and stroke my ego maybe ever so slightly, I think you've still got to implement it correctly. And there's some interesting looks here. We'll get into the more detail on the board in a little bit here. But there's a bit of new stuff. There's also some callbacks to the old Dune Imperium of old as well, which is nice to see as well. Especially for us folks, we're so used to playing with both expansions, more or less, almost exclusively. There are definitely some things. There's some extra mechanics that are being brought in as well, with the faction spaces, revisiting spaces as well for different wards. It's kind of neat. So there's plenty going on, but I think this should be good stuff. And of course, that's not even getting into the whole team aspect, which we obviously won't talk about too much here, but does have implications to, I think, some things that are going to happen, even just playing normally amongst four people. I think there's going to be some implications there, but we'll touch about it as we go.
Yeah, the one of the things that you mentioned, I think, first of all, I want to touch on, you said that it looks a little busier. I agree. I think it looks a little busier than the original game, just from the picture, from the example. Though not in a dramatic way. I think the main thing is that we have something that is called the spies, I guess. They're called spies now, at least from the lore write-up on the page. And I think that, I guess what you do is you have these little cylindrical discs that you're going to be putting on spaces, and they're tied to specific locations.
Right.
And they'll give you some sort of bonus. Like my intuition is telling me that those are infiltration spaces, or they give you access to those if you play a card that has the eyeball spy symbol, and it lets you go there no matter what. So that's my guess. But yeah, it does look a little busier on the board. I am interested to know whether or not we'll actually get like a deluxe. I know they're always doing deluxe things. There's deluxe worms on this page. Like, are we going to get a deluxe spy? That'd be cool. Although
their dinky little things aren't little cylinders. I think it's a nice idea, and I think they have to, you know, obviously you could just sit there and obviously just rework how the factions work, and there's no harm in that as well. You know, like the conspire space is you're dropping the cash for more troops in the intrigues. It's a lot more battle orientated. You know, your fold space is just getting some water, which makes rough sense. The Fremen.
No more fold space. There's no more fold space cards.
There is no more fold space cards whatsoever, which is a shame.
No, it's not. I hate that card so much. No.
I don't know. I play a lot of pools, so I kind of like it. It's, you know, it's things we've got to get addressed to. Obviously, there's, this is the thing. I do get the impression that I think this version of the game is, especially compared to that, we've had a lot of mortality. I feel like there is going to be a slight focus taken away from like exclusive deck building. That's not to say that it won't exist by any stretch of imagination, but I feel like it's going to be a lot more about like action compression. We talked about this a lot on the channel with like competition and stuff. But even like looking, I've mentioned like Desert Call and Usol or Usul, or however you pronounce that, you'd know better than me.
Usul, yeah.
Usul, which appear to be starter cards with plenty of symbols and stuff going on with them. So I get the impression that the intention is to have a much more punchier start to games, which I think has been somewhat if you'll pardon the pun, it's been experimented with the experimentation cards. Making that initial start, having more than just one card with an agent icon, so you're just getting the punchier starts, so you're kind of getting into the action sooner. But of course, that was just one card going almost exclusively to like one or two spaces, and it kind of made a bit of funkiness. Whereas this is obviously going to give a lot more options. And it's just an attempt, I think, just to diversify the start of the game, so people can kind of get off with their strategies a bit sooner. But I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see what things go. But yeah, it's I think we'll have to see. The other one I want to make a mention of as well, which I've noticed with those two cards specifically, and this again ties into the fact there's the 3-on-3 variant. So I think it looks like the 3-on-3 variant, you've got like two sets of factions, and I'm guessing this is tying into the lore specifically. And I think it was you noted, and possibly someone else noted, the fact, like with you saw on that they've got one of the faction symbols specifically on the top right, which does lend credence that depending on which side you pick, you might have slightly different starting cards. And that, again, might tie a bit more into the lore, because it's rather than just picking a certain leader, you can do a much more kind of us versus them, good versus evil, or, Atreides versus Harkonnen, or whatever the heck you want to do. And so I reckon that not only are you going to see, obviously, the two sides are going to have different starting decks, I think that might actually filter down into the normal game as well. I think players might have the choice of which decks they want to use as well. Again, just to try to diversify the starts. So maybe one might be a little bit more combat orientated, the one might be a little bit more kind of faction and intrigue orientated. And so you can pick whatever leader you're going to have and then try and pick a deck out of the two which might more suit your style. That might be a little bit more complicated, and this game compared to the base Doom Imperium is definitely more complicated, and that would be a slight worry for like people that are new to Doom Imperium and haven't played it very much, and suddenly you see this coming aboard and like the board is just, there's so much happening, it's a little bit intimidating.
I could see that being a problem, but
I reckon that's slightly intimidating, but I would like to see that, and again, speaking from a more kind of competition-y sort of side, being able to choose not just your leader, but then which deck you want to take out of two, and there's kind of, work slightly differently. I think that'd be a nice little feature. And I can see a lot of people getting a lot of use of that. It's allowing people more reasons to replay the game. And to personalize their experience. I think it's very important in board games. Again, I think of like my time of playing Nemesis loads. And obviously that's what it's about. It's about personalizing your own experience through what is a pretty sadistic game. But it's about the story. Obviously this is not quite the same, but it still gives a bit more, you're not just picking, Count Ilbarn, or do I go, Hull Lane or whatever else. The fact that you're picking your leader and a deck to try to complement that with, I think could go nice. And there could be some leaders that maybe you could go either way about it as well. I think that could be pretty sweet.
And you could probably, what's cool about this, so we have all these other leaders. We're going to get new leaders, certainly, with this. It's going to come with its own standalone leaders, maybe 8, maybe 10, we're not sure. I hope that the base game leaders from the OG Dune also work with this. And they seem like they would. And I really like what you're talking about, the personalization of this game. I think that is something that Scarlatch on the Board Game Geek Discord, Board Game Geek, probably on the Discord as well, but on the forums for this game, has talked about, that this has been mentioned as a kind of a sandbox Dune, and that you can add bits and pieces here to make this your game and to see how you really enjoy it. Now, for me, I've always been kind of like I want just the thing, give me the thing, and I'll just play the thing. I'm fine with that, but I can appreciate that appeal, and the flexibility and variability that it brings is really interesting and cool, and I want to see where that goes. As far as like the decks go that you mentioned, so yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I noticed the symbol at the top right, and I think it was someone in our Discord said it's tied to the Atreides symbol for the 3v3. I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense now that you're mentioning it. Like, yeah, maybe this is the Atreides deck, and then there will be a Harkonnen deck, or that might be. I think that's a I can't quite tell if it's a Harkonnen or an Emperor symbol.
Whichever one. I mean, I don't know my knowledge of the lore later on, because this is obviously set later on in the Dune franchise. Like that, I think that's pretty obvious. It's coming out not long after this Dune 2 comes out, so it makes us tie in with that. And I don't know much of the lore with them, but my impression is, but later on, it's basically Atreides versus not Atreides, is my generalization.
It's versus Harkonnen. Yeah. It's Harkonnen allied with the Emperor and the Spacing Guild. And it's basically like Atreides versus everybody. But
yeah.
The Atreides, you know, house is just these three major people at this point. It's just Paul, it's just Jessica, and it's just Gurney. And the others have kind of either died or been, you know, taken into the service of others. So not to spoil anything if you have not read the book or anything like that, but there's the main three. And so, yeah, it's interesting to see how that's going to play out. Like, we have Gurney, Jessica, and Muad'Dib, and that'll be like the three players for the, assuming, the House Atreides team. And then we might have like Fenring, like, you know, we might have Count Fenring, and then we might have like, Fade Rautha or something like that. You know, there could be any number of things like that. I'm guessing they would definitely milk those characters because they're very rich in their backstory, and they feature prominently in the film, I'm assuming. But yeah, so getting back to what you're saying here, that the different card decks, I do hope that there are multiple decks that you can mix and match or try out. Not just like one for the 3v3, but maybe like there's, you know, a four player variant one where you could just, you know, draft those with your character. That would make me really happy.
Yeah,
that would be really fun.
It's tough to know. It might be that there is a, it's kind of a tricky one. So I'm thinking back against like Dune Imperium, like what we've had playing with it, and I think I like back to Paul and like some of the things I've been able to ask him about, and kind of like some of his design choices. And again, I go back to like the leader drafting, how like he deliberately never really gave any details how to draw your leaders. You just left it up to the players to work themselves out. Again, I think it's part of that idea of like trying to get them to kind of create their own experience.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if we might have a situation where there is just a standard deck for the base for just playing four players, and then there's an Emperor and a Atreides deck for playing the 3v3 exclusives. I don't know. It's possible that might be the case, but it also might be that it's just the Atreides and then the Harkonnen decks, and you play the four player and you choose which one you want. It might be that you home rule to do that anyways. It might be more interesting. I don't know. Depends how these decks are going to look. We obviously don't know. We can see half of two cards. It's not enough to go on. But yeah, it's very possible that in these 3v3s, like everyone might just have supercharged decks, because it's not about four player and political maneuver. It's literally, we're here to, you know, defeat them specifically. So you've got a lot more license to supercharge people's decks really early just to get absolutely into it. Whereas if you do it in a four-player game, that could be horrendously imbalanced. And there could be a massive skill edge, and someone could just get on a roll really early and just be unstoppable. You think back to like the days of Baron Harkonnen with like the Rise of Ix and whatever else, Helena in the base game and stuff like that. It's you know, they're going to happen, but you probably want to try and avoid it where possible. But we'll see how that turns out. I think there's a chance to have a lot of fun and creativity in that. And besides, if you're playing this game with your friends, I mean, you know, why the hell not? You know, if you want to play with just some with the Atreides deck for a game, just play the Atreides deck for the game. Go ahead. No one's going to stop you. Go for it.
That's absolutely true. Yep.
So one thing I wanted to make a mention as well that I was looking through the door. Yes, you got the various snoopers bits pieces like that. One thing I've noticed as well is that they have definitely, that the High Council specifically has seen a major, major rework. The entire Landsraad Council entirely has been changed completely, which is good to see. There's some old school stuff there. There's a space in the bottom right which feels kind of very reminiscent of the old rally troop space, just getting a load of dudes ready to rock and roll. The old tech negotiation space, or whatever it was called. What was it called in base game? Hall of Oratory. Yeah. So a persuasion for buying, and an intrigue doesn't seem too bad either. But the thing that fascinates me most is the High Council and the ability to actually revisit it. Which I think is very fascinating indeed. And I quite like that. I think obviously with the Swordmaster, you can only go there once to get Swordmaster. I think that's fine. But I think having the High Council, the opportunity to revisit it, 5 Solari again is a fair amount of cash. But you're getting a lot of reward for it. Two spice and intrigue, free troops. You know, that's pretty good. It's kind of almost whole of oratory-ish rally troops-ish anyways. So there's nice stuff to see there. The Mentat, I think there's an ability to trash an intrigue to draw another intrigue. So they've incorporated mm-hmm. that mechanic, which of course introduces immortality, which is a good mechanic. And I think encourages people kind of taking chances with their stuff and encourage them to kind of, you know, explore and bits and pieces like that. Again, with the faction spaces, like there's only so much you can change with those. And you see there's slight tweaks going on. I don't know. We don't know what the symbol is next to the bottom emperor space. It does come up on a couple of other spaces I've noticed as well. That's just some new mechanic going on, which is fine. The only other thing I've mentioned spore space wise as well is I do appreciate there has been a change to how the core spaces work. It looks like you're in the top right. You've got the you've got like an area. I think this is meant to mimic kind of like the walls, like protecting areas on Arrakis. You think to like the base at the original Doom game. You've obviously got like the walls, which while they're in place, they protect like certain parts of the board being damaged by storms. That might be a feature that's going to be introduced. Maybe people can try and influence that. And you've got spaces outside, which, you know, like you've got this mining space, which is free water, which is very expensive. Yeah. But if you go there, you're going to get absolutely buckets of spice and whatever else is going on there. So there's something that's a real investment for. And that's good. You know, I think that's nice. I think just having the modular 1, 2, 3 spice, I think was fine. But I think cutting the 3 out and having a 4 space for free water is something that you've got to really commit for. And play is very long term, mate. And obviously, if you can get that and get absolutely gobs of spice for your troubles to go highlining or whatever else, then that can't be a bad thing. But yeah, other than that, that's me. That's my initial look at the board. Obviously, it's not talking about this stuff on the garrisons, like additions. There's some kind of weird mountain tile thing that I can see.
Well, that's the wall thing you were talking about.
That's the wall thing.
That looks like to be, at least to me, that to be like the shield wall or something like that that protects that area from in the base game from storm.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to be integrated into this game somehow, but that's one of the things that makes me most excited about this expansion is like, ooh, how does that work? Like, how does that change the game? Like, maybe at a point, like, my intuition is telling me that there's a conflict card in there that changes the way the board works, and that tile is on the board at the beginning, and then once it's gone, those spaces then change. They may become all they may function slightly differently. Like, that's my intuition here. So that'd be really cool. I don't know, like maybe not, but yeah, I love that Direwolf is starting to integrate more of the story driven aspects of this, or at least it feels that way, into the board. And it feels more, I don't know, it feels okay in some way. It feels a little bit busier, but this game always straddled the line between Amerithrash and Eurogame anyway, with its kind of like, you know, combat aspect. It's sort of, you know, it's deterministic, but you might have hidden information, that sort of thing. It's always kind of straddled that. And it's sort of straddled that thematic and mechanistic aspects as well. And I think it's starting to push a little more towards the thematic, and that makes me really happy. So,
yeah,
personally,
I mean, I think the fact that it's kind of straddled a few different themes is probably, like, we've talked about this, like, it's probably one of the great selling points for the game, and that it is, yeah, like it's a hybrid, and there's little bits of, you know, there's a bit of worker place, a bit of economy, a bit of PvP. This is always, I think, been one of the real strong points of the game, that there's little bits of all sorts of stuff going on, and different people from different backgrounds can give the game a spin. If you've played board games before, you'll probably recognize some of the features, and then you're getting kind of samples of other bits and pieces. But also, if you've not really touched board games before, it's still a reasonably simple entry point. And because it's only bits of these different types of game styles, you're not heavily required to go in depth. Like, if it was like if it's a deck building game, yeah, that's what you've got. And because of that, it's going to get pretty in depth a lot of the time. The more you get into it, Dune Imperium doesn't have to be like that, and it never needs to be like that. And I think that's why the game's done really well. It's still what's it currently on BGG? Is it still like number 8 or something on BGG?
I think it's it might be number 8.
Something like that was last time I checked, which is absolutely fantastic. You know, for a game that's been out for 3 years, And if you go into, obviously, you've got the expansions, which we'll talk about a bit more in a moment, you know, which have modified the experience for sure. Maybe for better, maybe for worse, depending on how you feel about certain bits and pieces. But I think it's still pretty solid. So I think it makes sense to not go away from that core concept of how the game just works. I know I was sampling some comments on BGG, and not everyone was the happiest. Some people were expecting like a bit more of a grander rework, but I mean, there is an element of, you know, of fixing a wheel that isn't broken here. You know, the base game is clearly done pretty well. Like we've managed well enough of it for the time being. So it can't be that bad, I guess.
So I agree. I agree. There's something about, yeah, it's still 8, by the way, on Board Game Geek's top 100. And yeah, I think that what people need to kind of, I've read some of those comments too. I think generally everyone needs to just kind of relax. Just having this game doesn't mean the other game goes away. It's not, you can't think that this is going to be a cash grab. None of these things that we've been playing should be surprising to you at all. Like we've had Dune Imperium for the first movie. There's a second movie coming out. Makes a lot of sense that there's going to be a second game. None of that is really out of character for Direwolf. Direwolf has put out many versions of Clank, and no one's ever complained about that before.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
Clank,
like,
you know,
come on, guys.
Clank be going for?
It's, I don't know.
Long
over
enough.
Over long. 8 years, I think, maybe. It's been, maybe not that long, maybe like 6 years. It's been going on for a long time, but there are like 3 versions. There's like Clank in Space, there's Clank Legacy, then there's a new one, Clank Catacombs. There's 4 versions of the game, base game, like they are standalone. So now we have the second version of Dune Imperium, which makes me very happy, because the way it looks to me is that Paul Denon has taken some feedback from fans online, some from this channel, some from Cheezable, some from elsewhere, Orski, wherever, and has redesigned this game to like think about some of those criticisms we've had. Like, I mean, some of the things we've really had problems with in the past seem to be reflected here. One of the things I've always had problems with, there's a lot of like infiltration is very good, and if the spies include, or they're, that's just a mechanism to make things infiltratable, basically, if that is how that works, that's strong, because you can build it into your strategy. It's actually a choice you make, as opposed to something you just have a card that goes there, and the value of that card is just so good, it's so high because they're so good. Or you're Helena in the base game and you're inherently better because you have an ability that
no
warps the game for you. Yeah,
yeah, no one else did. And we saw that with the expansions, as Infiltrate became more readily available to other characters, her power slipped because suddenly this
exactly.
unique ability of hers, and like pulling cards from the row just got annihilated, just slowly got whittled away. And yeah, that might be what it is. Maybe like you get, maybe you can pick up these cylinders as like a resource. I think one of the faction cards, Fenring, has the ability to maybe to generate one of these, and then yeah, you can put it on a mm-hmm. faction space, and on a faction, and for
or
one round, and for one round, you get infiltration there, and just one round, and like it's put down in turn order or something like that, or reverse them. I don't know exactly. We'll see what it is, but I think that's a nice idea. I was thinking the other thing you could do maybe is like you. If someone goes that space, you get like a resource, or maybe you get mm-hmm. the same resource that was visited, but I don't think that quite works. I mean, I think just allowing infiltration to either one of them for one round, I think is more interesting rather than just, okay, someone went there, here's a spice, or here's an intrigue card. I think that would be a lot more interesting, a lot more diverse, definitely. So I reckon yeah. that's what we'll see.
Well, interestingly, there's only one space for each of these locations on the board. So we've been talking about, so if these are, again, this is all speculation, so keep that in mind, everybody, that these spaces might, the spies create infiltration spaces. Please note, there's only one space for one cylinder for each of these locations. So if you put your disc, your cylinder on, and I think I'm not sure how many each player is going to get. I know there are 3 for the 6-player version, so maybe you only get one. Maybe you only have one. And maybe like you get that ability moves it around or something like that. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm looking at the components. Look at the green section. Looks like there's 3 there. I don't know, but I think I think it's something you've got to physically generate somehow. Like
you have to physically generate it.
You've got to generate them. You don't start with them. You've got to create them by going to various places or via abilities or maybe a card. Some cards might let you do that sort of thing.
Right. So if you have that disc there, then no one else can put it there, it seems like. I mean, that's generally how this game works, yeah. or it has worked in the past, right? You don't get to dislodge people. This isn't that kind of a game. So if you have Infiltration Swordmaster, like and Mentat, that's the thing you do. You're like gonna be fine. You're like you're in charge here. You can go to Swordmaster whenever you need to. You can do the Mentat effect. Even if you don't get the Mentat, you still get to draw a card, you get to trash an intrigue, draw another intrigue. Like those things seem a lot more integrated wholeheartedly into the game than simply having a card that randomly will come up. You can plan for it, right?
And
so you can say, like, I want this later on, I'm gonna do it now.
Yeah, I was gonna say as well, and the other thing is also as well, it ties into the lore still, because that's what it's all about. It's political intrigue. That's what the story has always been about, you know, shady backroom deals, people getting access to stuff they shouldn't get access to. And it just all ties back into that, which I think is, it has to be said and it has to be credited that, you know, you've got Dune Imperium, which is a really solid game, and you can tell that there is a lore behind it, but you definitely don't need to know the lore to play the game. Now, I'm not saying that if you haven't read all of Thingy's books, you can't play this game, not at all. But if you have, like, knowledge of the lore, you can kind of see how elements have been placed into the game, you know, with the spies, obviously the worms, obviously the art and the characters, that sort of thing. Again, you don't need to know this stuff, but you can kind of, you can see the features that have been incorporated into the game, and you can kind of headspin where those ideas come from. Again, even like with the, if the wall does act as we think, just putting that basically is an idea from the original bait game of Doom, you know? That's not a bad thing at all. That's a nice callback, if anything.
Absolutely. No, I agree. It's that's one of the strengths of Imperium is that you could just play this really solid, mechanistically sound, exciting game. Like it's a worker placement game with deck building. It has combat. It has like a area control, area majority style thing. It has races. It's a race to 10 points. Like those things all resonate with players, I think, regardless of whether you like Dune. I don't think it's, you know, it's not everybody's cup of tea, obviously, and no game is, but it has a lot going for it. I think this one, just based on what I have seen so far and the way the changes that have been made to it, like there's some interesting changes, like the space that was originally Research Station, which in the base game gave 3 cards. In Immortality, it gave you 2 cards and a research bump. In this one, it looks to give you 2 troops and 2 cards.
Which is pretty good.
It still costs 2 water. It is still really good.
That's a pretty decent rule, yeah.
Yeah, and if you thought about that in terms of, oh, well, you know, that if that was in the base game, that'd be broken. Like, well, it might have been. But now looking at the game and the way that water and its importance has shifted around, like, I think that it's just water is so much more important than it was in the base game. It was very important to get spice and all that. But now you power your troops. Now you couldn't power your troops with water really ever. I mean, you could with Hardy Warriors, and it's kind of doing that there, but you have this space that does both troops and cards. You have the old Hardy Warrior space, which isn't called that anymore, I don't think, but gives you a troop and it trashes a card, so it feels deck building. And then you have a 3 water desert space that gives you the ability to summon makers and basically toss tons of troops into the combat. Like that's exciting. And so like it actually makes it, if we were to bring in Ariana from the base game, suddenly I think she might be like one of the best leaders in the game. The fact that she generates water with her ring ability could definitely offset her downside of drawing a card and taking one less spice. So I'm optimistic that a lot of the things that we're seeing here have been thoroughly play tested, have been really taken, the aspects of the community that have talked about, taken and rethought meaningfully. So I'm really happy with the choices so far. I wish I knew a little more about the contracts though.
yeah, this is, I'll go to that in a second. But yeah, the a world where Ariana Thorvald is like actually a pretty decent leader in a competitive scenario is a universe that I'm not familiar with, but I would be curious.
No one is.
No.
Well, I guess she had a small stint in Immortality. Everyone thought she was the best leader as soon as immortality.
Yeah, I mean, she's good in some. All the leaders of, I know we're slightly deviating here. We'll get back to that, but I mean, like, all the leaders have like their own specific. You know, she's very good, obviously, at looking to snipe cards off of the Talaxia, that sort of thing, whatever else. But anyways, something else I was gonna say. So this contract stuff. So I've heard about this. Is this referring to like these spaces and like the center top, or?
A good question. So there's a new symbol on the wealth space, or it used to be called the wealth space.
Oh, it's that.
For the emperor. And I think that is the contract symbol.
I see.
And so we don't know exactly what the contracts are yet, because they're not visible on the board.
No.
Except for those two spaces, that one that says three Solari or two cards. Now, one is keyed to a desert space and one is keyed to a city space. So I don't know how that exactly works, and I don't think we're going to know until we get the rule book.
It's also worth noting that if you look at the combat card specifically shown, it's also on there.
That's a good point. Yeah. One thing I am hoping that contracts are, and again, this is pure speculation, is that they're tied to end game victory points. You get the ability to achieve a contract, or maybe you draw a contract tile that lets you fulfill it through some other means. Like maybe it's sending spice off, maybe it's, you know, I don't know, trashing a certain number of cards from your deck, maybe it's something that you aren't expecting, like it's a way to generate points. We don't actually know if there are, I mean, I'm assuming there's spice must flows in this game, but we don't know if that's true because they're not even shown here. And I mean, there's no other intrigues with points that we've been able to see, so I'm still unclear how that exactly works.
You know, I actually reckon, sorry to jump in quickly, but I actually reckon you've got a good shout here. I think back to my excursion playing Twilight Imperium 4. Thanks, Patience, for that, by the way. And I think back to the times I played a few games of that. Now, obviously, Twilight Imperium is a completely different game. I'm not going to go into specifics, but the way the game works is you score points is you've got public objectives, which are just there and everyone fulfills them as they can. But you also have secret objectives. And the idea is that you can draw them as the game goes up to a max of like 3 or whatever else. And if you can fulfill those, that also gives you some additional score. Now, tying back to Dune Imperium and the world of endgame victory points, its relevance has changed a bit. I guess the thought is that it's always been a little bit kind of brute forcey in that, you know, if you draw like Panzerfin Plans or Khorne or whatever else, obviously they are exceptionally strong cards, because especially in the base game, because there wasn't really ways to get endgame victory points. There was very few. Mm-hmm. They were about it. And its relevance has gone, you know, probably up as time's gone on, but it never felt the most fair, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that is perhaps a valid criticism. You know, like if someone plays the game and they just pull Panzerfin Plans and core the market, especially in like Immortality and Ix and such, it's a massive advantage. And the thing is, there's not many, very many available to you. So I think this might be a good shout. Maybe you can you get these contract symbols. Maybe if you can get like two of them, you can spend those to basically pull a quote unquote secret objective for you to fulfill. And that could be anything. You know, that could be maybe like you've got to spend X amount of resources to get the point. Maybe you've got to have a specific, like, you know, persuasion with an alliance, or, you know, you've got to win a combat of X amount. Who knows? There's a lot of scope for a lot of things to do. And I think that could be fun. And I think that's not a bad way to do it, because then it feels a little bit more like if you've got that way and you've got, like, say, 20 different contracts, then at least while it's strong to be able to draw these abilities to maybe score extra points or whatever else, or maybe you can cash, maybe someone like you score them to get extra victory points. Some of them are maybe you score them during the game for a specific resource. Maybe one might allow you to change like, you know, 6 Solari into 4 Spice. You can do it whenever you want, but some are specifically for end game. It's a bit more variant. But it feels a lot fairer because you don't know quite what you're going to draw and you don't know how easy it's going to be to fulfill it. And if people do end up like getting these end game victories, maybe only a few of them give that, but make them really pricey and hard to get. You think of the good example we always talk about is Grand Conspiracy for the base game. Yeah, you can get 2 in-game victory points off that, but it's really
it's
hard.
It's an X.
Or X, or whatever it is. You know what I mean? But it's really hard to score 2 victory points, but it doesn't feel unfair. You know, Plans win plans, right. Especially with Immortality, it's not hard to get 2 points out of that. Call the market as well. Like, somebody just pull that, and that's it. You just got 2 extra points. Merry Christmas for not doing necessarily a whole lot. You know, Grand Conspiracy, you can get one. It's a little bit tough. But getting that second point is very difficult. And you think as well, like the other end games we've seen now, like with the ones having like 10 slurry in the game, which is not the easiest thing in the world, unless you've got it specifically and you're going for that. Right. And then you've got stuff like with the Talaxu tracks, you know, getting to the end of the track and something else for a point. Like, yeah, it's a victory point. It's really good, but they're not easy to achieve. So maybe this is the way of contracts to have like some that are easier. That allow you to, you know, cash in some resources, maybe like pay 2 spies for 3 troops and just put them in whenever you want and just say, right, I'm playing this contract. And have some that are endgame specific and you keep those until the end of the game. And that way also, if people are getting contracts, you don't know whether what they are. And that's very important to this game. You think with intrigues, it's very important to know that intrigues are currently, they might be battle orientated, they might be persuasion orientated, there might be endgame victory points, they might be current victory points, it might be if you win, you do this. If you're going to take the endgame stuff out of the intrigue deck and put this into this contract system, which you might decide to do, I don't think you want to have the contracts be just end games. You need to have something else there so it retains that element of not knowing what people are going to find. Again, this is all just speculation and guessing, but I honestly think it's not unreasonable.
No, I think it's a really good point. I would definitely like to see that happen. That's my hope, is that the end game victory points are either reduced significantly in the intrigue deck or removed altogether, or they're just the ones that are difficult enough that you don't feel that you just luck sack into them, which I know a lot of people in the community have said, like, okay, that's sometimes it feels like you play as best as you can, everyone is pretty close, and then whoever draws the best intrigue cards wins. That doesn't feel very rewarding, and I think that hopefully this changes that a little bit. We don't know again, but hopefully I do. I'm on you with that. That makes sense to me.
I think it'd be a nice way of doing the system. You know, it's about rewarding characters that investing into it. But like, if so, you don't want to have a situation where someone's sitting there with like 3 contracts. You just feel, oh great. You know, you think back to like our times, like playing Emperor Shaddam in the homebrew stuff. I know I bring it up and down again, but like, there was times where you almost don't want to end the game because there's someone who's just so far ahead because they must be because they've got so much in the tank, and that's a bad space to be. So you want to try and avoid that.
Yeah. What do you think about the makers? We have some new quote-unquote dreadnought type units. I don't know if they are units, but we have worms. Mm-hmm. And you can get them if you have a maker's hook, and maker's hook is a new token that you get and you put by your garrison. It looks like you can get it from, it looks like it's a little hard to see, but you can get it from the Siege Tabor space, or what was Siege Tabor. I don't think it looks like it's still Siege Tabor by the name. And it says like one maker's hook, a troop, and a water, or a water and then something else, which there's like a symbol there.
I mean, who knows?
I don't know what that is.
It could be a cupcake for all we know. We have absolutely no idea.
A cupcake.
We can't tell. What the hell, you know, right? I bet Jessica makes spice cupcakes. No. Yeah. So obviously, yeah, I think it's a nice idea. It's kind of like a temporary, like, you know, added. Funnily enough, this reminds me a lot of, going back to our homebrew stuff, of what was the guy that has the troops you stack up in Hangar Basin? You played him. Was it Farouk or something like that? Or
Farouk.
Yeah. And funnily enough, this actually isn't that far away from that sort of idea. You
know, you're right.
It's very similar, isn't it? You get this hook, you put it into your garrison, and then at some point you go to one of the bigger mining spaces and you can spend some water to actually get these worms and bring them into combat as a big, like, dumping, here you go, you know, have fun with that. It makes sense. I like the idea of it. I think it looks like they're 3 strength, I think, which is fine. Don't need to be too much more than that. And I imagine they'll just be like, they're used one time, whether you win, whether you lose, you don't keep them like dreadnoughts. It's a one time, it happens in that combat and then they go. So make good use of them. And I think it's a good system. I think it's a nice way of trying to find alternatives. I think one of the issues you can have sometimes as well is like, you think of like the old Highliner races, like whoever gets Highliner first, it can be so hard to beat them in combat. you do sometimes need additional ways to bring in troops. And while obviously with the expansions for Dune Imperium, there's stuff like, you know, with shipping and bits and pieces like that, there is only so many ways you can do it. So I think this is a nice way of being able to counteract a little bit of stuff later on. But also in the mid game, when people do start bringing up this water and start bringing up these, getting these hooks ready, making combat a lot less certain in the mid game, because you can feel sometimes, and I think currently, like rounds three, round four, round five, you can kind of see who's going to win it. I think this definitely adds a little bit more of uncertainty to combat, which is probably only a good thing.
Now, one thing I don't know the answer to, I mean, we don't know the answer to a lot of these, but Maker's Hooks, whether I'm not sure whether they are something you keep for the rest of the game or something that you spend. And that's something, it doesn't look like you spend them on the desert spaces. It looks like you kind of, if you have it, get this. It's got a colon symbol. It doesn't have an arrow spend symbol. So I'm guessing that it's you just have
once you get it, you've got it. And I think that's fine. I don't think it's something you're going to be using regularly. You think there's, as it stands that we know of, there's only two places you can use those, which is not a lot. So I think it's fine. Once you get it, you know, it gives an idea. Like, if someone wants to get hold of that nice and early, it's an early objective for them, then that can be a bit of leverage they can make in a combat. And then suddenly, like, if someone's got, like, a Maker's Hook and, like, a troop lying around, and suddenly they go Mentat, and they've got Action coming on you, that's a pretty horrible place to be as someone who wants to win a combat. Like, well, what do I do here? Because it's pretty scary with these worms. And I imagine there are going to be cards and ways around that the worms will be stronger than just free strength. Because free strength for a worm doesn't seem like the most going.
Right. But if you remember, there are lots of cards in the base game that take... Well, there are a couple of cards, like Double Cross is one that reminds me of this. Like, you can imagine, like, a worm. If you have a worm, remove a troop from another opponent. Stuff like that. You can... A little bit of take
that.
Yeah,
that's a good shout, actually. I like that. Yeah, you can remove a troop from, like, a player of your choice if you've got that. Something like that. I think that'd be nice. And it makes sense. It kind of, again, it still fits into the theme of the game a little bit.
Yeah. One thing I wish I knew, and I'm aching to know, is how the worms work with that wall token, and whether how they affect those three walled off spaces in the top, you know, the right top right hand side of the board. That is just, like, going to be so cool. I can't wait to see what happens there. My guess is it's the wall's going to fall at one point, and then that changes the way that those spaces work. How that works with worms and whether it does at all is something I'm excited to see.
I think we'll definitely see. I'll be honest, and I'm just going to throw this out there. I might be wrong. I kind of hope I'm wrong. I have a slight feeling it might be specifically for the 3v3s. Just throwing it out there. I don't know if it's good. There might be a way of it also featuring in the standard game, but I have a funny feeling it might be specifically to do with the 3v3s. Because, like, if there's a wall there, like, what reason would you take it out? Well, you know, I can't think of normally a reason you would take it out, but if you're playing a 3v3 game and suddenly one of the factions is getting, like, a monopoly on these cities, the other faction might be interested in kind of messing about with that a little bit, and maybe they might want to take out the wall. Again, going back to the original Dune game, you know, no one in theory wants to take out these walls and exposing more of the planet to the sandstorms. But of course, if your opponents have got domination on the planet, suddenly you don't care so much. So I think it might play into the team stuff more specifically, but that's, we'll see.
So a couple things, other things I noticed about this board. So the Emperor Alliance bonus, the bonus is a spy. It's not a troop. Interesting little change here. Yeah, so I think that's a really interesting change, giving the top level, once you get to the Alliance level for the Emperor, a spy. I mean, that's cool. So hopefully we don't know how they work again, but I'm going to assume that you place them, and then if you're out of them, maybe you can move them. But you probably just get to place them around.
I think so. And also, one thing I want to mention before we go quickly into the expansion stuff. Looking at the Wheels Within Wheels card, that symbol would suggest to me you send him anywhere you've got an infiltrator.
Yes, exactly.
That's exactly what that is. Which makes sense. And I like that, because it means cards like that, like, you can always draw them, and you can kind of, they're not fixed. Like, you kind of decide what to do with them, how you want to play with them. And if you've got influence with certain factions, you get bonuses. That'd be nice. Anyways,
it's going to be so fascinating. It's going to be so fascinating to see which of the spies become meta, like which ones are the best.
Oh, you know what yeah, I mean
that's yeah. gonna be so cool. Yeah I'm very, very excited about that. Like you go, like people go like, oh well, if I just go get Spice right now, but they're like, they're gonna go get the Spy, they're gonna Spy right there. Like, is that a good trade-off early on? Man, that's, there's gonna be so many good decisions.
People as well, like if you're looking to go Highlander back in the round for a combat and then someone's putting an infiltrator there, that can force your hand, because obviously people like to go in high line as late as physically possible, but if someone puts an infiltrator there, they're forcing you to go early, and maybe that person has no intentions of going there anyways, but they're just trying to force your hand and stuff like that. There could be some fun play.
We still have Solari for the Spacing Guild. We still have an intrigue card for the BGs. We still have water for the Fremen. All that stuff makes sense. But I think, what do you think about the changing of the spaces for the factions? Like, I mean, they feel like they've just been kind of like thrown into a blender and then everything kind of like separated out, don't they?
Yeah, a little bit. There's still some thematics. Obviously, again, the Emperor's still going to be a bit more, again, combat heavy and like obviously kind of intriguey sort of heavy. The Fremen and Bene Gesserit feel remarkably kind of similar to each other, which is interesting. I didn't expect that. But I think it's good. Like, I'll be honest, like, my assumption was that even if it wasn't gonna be a board rework, the only thing left to do for the base game, if you're gonna keep it at that, was a shake up of the faction spaces. We've had the same spaces for 3 years, and I think it was about time. You know, their relevance has changed. You know, the fold space of course has changed relevance significantly depending on what expansions you play, if any. But I think it's about time to give them a tweak up, and I think it'd be good. You know, I think it'd be nice, it'd be refreshing. You don't have to change them all. Secrets still works exactly the same, which is fine. I don't see a reason to change that. You know, making, it's interesting that the Fremen, you no longer can gain water there. You've got to go to the spacing potentially to get your water to go visit the Fremen, which I think is interesting. I like the idea of the factions kind of interplaying a bit more with each other. I think with the standard game, they all serve their specific purpose. You know, your Emperor is your money and your troops. Your spacing was access and then a load of troops. You know, your Bene Gesserit was your deck building, and the Fremen was resources and some troop generation as well, which makes sense, you know, and I've got no issues with that being the case. But I do feel like they now interplay with each other a little bit more, you know, like, yeah, going spacing to go Fremen feels like a more kind of natural sort of move. You know, a change in the Bene Gesserit space to, you know, allow some card draw, but also get some infiltration tokens for later on, you know, I think it makes sense. And I do like the idea behind it. If I was Paul Denon, and if I was, say, sticking with the base game, that's what I would have done. I would have changed the faction spaces and just freshened them up. But if you're going to do a rework, you might as well go all in, basically. Go to the races, have fun, you know, introduce a new mechanic while you're going there, which is the contract stuff. Give it a bit of a tweak, and rock and roll, basically. And I don't see any issues with that at all. It should be good.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is... they're very good choices. One thing I'm most interested... So, we heard that these are compatible. This will be compatible with Ix and Immortality, and that it'll be modular and all that stuff. How do you feel about that? What are your thoughts on the initial modularity?
So I've thought as much about this as I can in the reasonably short frame of time that I've got. It makes sense that you have the ability to do so. Personally, though, I don't think it's going to be necessary. I think this slightly ties in the fact that, yeah, the board is definitely pretty busy. And even if you think, again, back to the original Dune Imperium, it's not like base Dune Imperium was a basic game. No. Any stretch of imagination, there was still plenty going on, but obviously it was a beginning. And you've got the expansion to come out, you know, to kind of diversify and drive the action a little bit. And I think on the whole, you know, your thoughts on Ix and Immortality might vary a bit. But I think they've largely done the purposes that they required. I mean, this also goes into the fact, again, when we're talking about like a 2.0 Dune Imperium, that I think what you wanted to do was, rather than just add more and more and more stuff, at some point you have to refine what you've got. And I think that's what this is an attempt at. You know, there is still obviously some new mechanics, but there's some that are now not going to be included. And it's kind of trying to condense what has worked and trying to just refine the package and deliver a bit more of a concise experience. I think this is what it does.
Yeah, I agree.
I personally don't think I would want to play this with Ix or Immortality, even if I could. I get the impression that, and obviously it's a bit kind of recency biased, because obviously there's a lot of stuff here that we just don't know about. So that's kind of obviously masking our opinions. It's something we've got to bear in mind. You know, Dune Imperium, we've been playing it, it's been out for 3 years. We know how the game works, we know how the mechanics work, and so, you know, for us that have played a lot of games and we go from Dune Imperium to Ix and Immortality, it's not a big change because we know the concept so well. This, obviously, there's stuff that we don't know, so it's kind of making it a little bit more difficult to judge. But I don't think this needs shipping, and I don't think, I certainly don't think this needs Immortality, truth be told. And that's not a knock on either of them. That's just me saying that I think there is plenty enough going on in this experience. And sometimes more is not always better. I talked about this with Immortality when I did my review of it back in like November, I think it was, when it came out. And I did a big video on it. And I talked about even then that I did receive some comments from folks saying that when Immortality came out, we were already reaching that level of just of too much going on. There's a term for it, I can't forget off the top of my head.
Critical mass.
Critical mass, that's probably one, yeah. And for some people, like for me, it was fine. I was okay with it, but I did not want any more. For some people, we were already hitting that critical mass, and people were saying they just didn't want to do Immortality with Ix and the base game. There was just too many things going on. And I couldn't say that they were wrong, because there is a hell of a lot going on if you're playing Dune Imperium with Rise of Ix and Immortality. Even if you've played hundreds, you've played thousands of games, there's so many things going on, it's hard to keep track of everything. So the thought of me, especially early, of playing this with Ix's shipping and techs and with Immortality's Talaxu stuff just seems so crazily mind-boggling. I don't think I want anything to do with it. The best way I could compare this is Epic Mode. And this is not trying to be a knock on Epic Mode. I think Epic Mode with base game and Rise of Ix, I think is actually a lot of fun. And you would agree, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you really enjoy it. I think it complements it pretty well and it goes nice with it. Base game and Ix and Immortality and Epic Mode for me is too much. And it's just, there's too much happening all at once, and it's just it's a little too cluttered for me. There, and maybe that's because, you know, there are some people who are able to comprehend that experience and are able to enjoy it, and that's fine. Good for you. But I think the vast majority just can't, because there's just so much happening. And I think this would be the same thing as well. I think Uprising, just Uprising, is going to be totally fine and a really good experience. I can't sit here and say that I'm convinced that adding in Ix's shipping, and that's not a knock, and I know I've had my comments on Ix's shipping, and sometimes I wish it didn't exist, but it does help drive the action of the game. And Immortality stuff, I don't necessarily think it's going to complement your experience of this game. You're not going to know until you try. But I would recommend, like, if it's your first game of this, for the love of God, do not play this with expansions. Are you crazy? Go see someone and get some help. If you're just asking for loads of trouble here, you know, that's my opinion of it. It might be that we play this game for a while and we get the understanding, you're like, you know, actually it's good, and then maybe someone like gives it a spin, maybe just Immortality, and it's like, oh, this actually complements it really nicely in ways we didn't expect, and it's very possible. But my initial thoughts is I appreciate that you can use an expansion of this. I think it makes sense that you've got to allow that, but I don't necessarily think it's going to be that. I don't think it's going to add to the experience particularly. I think this is going to be enough of a journey on its own without adding even more stuff going on.
I agree with you. I think that's a very good good look here. I think the idea of this game with all the expansions, first of all, I really don't want to have to put it, like, I'm thinking about this in real life because I'm going to be playing with this with my friends.
Yes.
I don't really want to put everything together and then go, all right, let's play just base Uprising, and having to take everything out, get separating the cards. I know they're going to have little icons, but man, I don't want
to
do that.
I mean, I think back to my trip to Toronto back in the spring, and myself, Lannister, Drazo, Doom, and Huey. We obviously we visited the Snakes and Ladders in Annex in Toronto. Lovely place, by the way. If any of you live in Toronto and play board games, for the love of God, give them a visit. Really nice, enjoyed the service. The food was actually pretty good too as well, which I imagine is not always the case. I had a good experience. We played some Dune Imperium, and it was the game that I recorded bits of as we went. The setup for that, even with five people, still took like 10 minutes. Right. You know, for 4 or 5 people. Now, obviously, we're not necessarily going to be the most efficient, and we were kind of piecing together from, like, we had Huey's base game and Rise of Ix, and I'd got Immortality, and I'd brought it along, so we had to kind of work it out. But, yeah, setup is something you've got to consider. And, yeah. You know, we play, obviously, tons of online stuff, and we are kind of blessed by that. Not only the fact that it the convenience, but obviously how good the mod has been. The amount of time saved on, you know, we literally click like 2 buttons and start game, and it's all done for us. You know, you're playing physically.
Big shout out to Asmodeus.
Yeah. If you're playing physically, like, there's a lot to go through. And that's another thing why I would not want to add the expansions. Can you imagine setting this up with both the expansions, having a deck of like 200 cards or something?
Yeah, it's already a lot with I sleeved all my cards and it's like already really hard to
like
shuffle.
And like the atomics mechanics, I mean, it's just,
oh god.
That's
another thing. We're not going to have atomics in this version.
No.
As far as I can tell.
No, there is no, it doesn't look like there's going to be any atomics based. And it makes sense, you know, atomics is an immortality thing specifically. That doesn't necessarily mean there won't be a way of maybe manipulating things slightly. It remains to be seen. But yeah, I have a funny thing. Yeah, but generally speaking, we're gonna have to get used to a world without atomics again. Which I'm okay with. I'm more just happy that we're gonna live in a world without Talaxy Master. For that, we can all praise and be joyful. And I'll be a happy man. I'll be glad there. But yeah, so that's something we have to get adjusted to. But that's not a bad thing, you know, just because there's no atomics, that's not a bad thing necessarily, by any stretch of imagination, but we'll have to see.
I largely agree with what you're saying. I'll still try everything together online, probably.
We'll do a stream, we'll get 2 volunteers and say we're going to be here a long time.
We're going to do everything, even epic mode, it's everything.
Physically possible, we'll do, yeah, Dune Uprising epic, both expansions, it'll be the biggest...
Imperium, all in.
The biggest cluster you'll ever see in your life. We'll get to the end and be like, oh, it's over? Oh, okay.
Right. I still think that Imperium without Ix is brilliant. It's a brilliant game, brilliant design, very, very well well balanced. And with Ix, it's really good. But I I don't really like the way that I like the way that it's changed the game, but I don't really like having to force shipping as a thing. Like, I don't like that, and I especially don't like it in Immortality. I think in Immortality it's even worse. I think it's exacerbated that problem a little bit, to the point where I just try not to do it and fail miserably.
Yeah,
because you just don't do it and you don't get money. It's get Swordmaster.
Slight sidebar here, but I had a segment at a time when we were playing Rise of Ix and before Immortality came out, and I would basically by principle just not ship and just refuse it, even if I could go there. Just basically refuse it every time. Play up Paul Atreides, and just keep doing it to see how long it take me to win a game. Well, one eventually. That was the issue, I think, as well, and that's something that's going to be interesting with this, is obviously when these expansions got brought out, you have these new mechanics that get brought in, and they're typically probably strong need to be, not just shipping, but stuff like the initial infiltration cards. I mean, you think of stuff like In the Shadows and Unloading, stuff like Web of Power and that sort of thing. A lot of these new mechanics, when they've been brought in, I have noted, and a lot of people have noted, that they are probably stronger than what they should be for the cost that it takes to set them up. Now, it'd be interesting to see how that goes for this, because the only real new mechanic, per se, in this that's of possible relevant note is the contract stuff. And so my only concern is that the contracts are a bit too value-heavy, and people just start diving for those late game, thinking they're just going to pick up points here and there. That is not what I want to see. I think the contracts have got to be something that you've got to get and you've got to set up. But there's gonna be occasions maybe where like if you've played the game a lot and you know what contracts are in there, you might set yourself up for a few over the course of the game and then start diving, and you might fluke some, you know, and you can never eliminate that. Again, I think like Twilight Imperium 4, you know, like there's so many secret objectives in the game, but if you've played enough, like you can kind of set up to try and pick up a few, or especially the public objectives. There's only like 10 of each or something, or 12 of each. So you can set yourself up hoping that a certain type of it comes up. And if you find it, great. You know, that's the gamble you take. But I wouldn't want to see that getting too lopsided. That is a concern.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. So I think that for me, I'm going to play the crap out of this base without anything. I don't really want to return to the old cards. Honestly, I want to try something new. I want to see how they've built this as a standalone experience. Mm. And I want to have that experience without bringing in the other stuff. I probably will do that. You know, obviously, I want to try everything out. But for me, I think that this, just as looking at the board, makes more sense. Mm. It makes more sense to me. And one thing I'd be very concerned with is if we were playing Immortality and Ix, look at how powerful, look at how strong the new Highliner, or not Highliner, the Fold Space space is. Mm. You get a water with your first action. Yeah. Second action, you can
do a lot with that.
You can do a lot. Yeah, but it's crazy because I wonder, maybe faction access is a little bit more spread out in your starting cards. I kind of doubt it, but you know, I'd be worried about grafted cards and that fold space or whatever it's called. I can't read it.
Grafting in this would be completely off the rails.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if like the main power for graft is always just jamming as many agent icons as you can. And if you think like if a lot of our starting deck is gonna have, you know, if some of our starting deck is gonna have these symbols already, yeah, that would be pretty nuts very early. Yeah. I'd be worried.
So one thing that also has me very excited about this is a return to the spice economy. That spice is the base that forms the economy of the rest of the game. You gotta get spice, you gotta trade it in for Solari, and then you profit. Right.
Yeah.
So if you look at the top right hand corner of the board, you can see that there is, by the way, that top space is restricted to 2 influence, it looks like, from the spacing guild still.
There's a symbol there. That. I was trying to guess what it was. It might well be that is a thing. Yeah. I was unsure if it was something else. My initial guess, I think, was wrong. It's very possible that might be what it is, yeah.
I think that's what it is. So, and then there's spice cost next to it, which we don't know. It might be 4, might be 5, might be 3. Probably, yeah. I'm guessing it's going to be like 4. But you know, you never know. It could be even 5 because you get 5 Solari and a free bump. But you have to have that. So that basically is like the shipping space, right? Which is fine. I don't think that's a problem. If there's a spice cost associated with it, if spice economy returns, because with the shipping, you never had to have a spice economy. It generated everything for free.
Exactly. You know? That was
my problem with that.
Yeah, it's shipping totally changed how the entire economy system worked. And obviously, that's another thing. If you bring shipping back into this, it's going to change how the game works significantly. And it might just be better without it. But it makes more sense, you know. First you get the spice, then you get the money, then you get the power, right?
Then you get the worms.
Better. You get the worms. That sounds reasonable. But yeah, I think it'll be nice to kind of go back to that. I think with all the expansion stuff, I think it has slightly been lost sight. It's become a much more kind of mercantile sort of monetary system, if that makes sense. You know.
Yeah.
That you're not really investing like as such. You're more just getting there first and being the first one there. The base, it was a lot more, you know, it was a lot more kind of investing your resources and kind of, you know, into certain spaces to get particular stuff out of it and then do what you want to do with it. Whereas, yeah, the shipping is kind of just a bit of just get there first and then just get everything, basically. And the balance to that was, you know, if you think to a space on the board, you can't just keep hitting the Great Flat. Because you need the water, and obviously it was a decent space, whereas shipping, you just go there all the time, and you rock and roll. And the only defense against that is to stop people getting there by getting there yourself, basically, which, you know, it is what it is, a different system, but I agree. I think this would be a nice callback to what it was originally playing this, and I think it would be quite refreshing.
Another thing I noticed upon kind of gazing at this board, pixelated for so long, is that the Mentat space has another requirement. It's a little hard to see, but underneath the name of the Mentat space, which I don't think is called Mentat anymore, I don't know what it's called, has a 2 influence requirement with the Emperor.
That's what that is?
Yeah. It's the same thing as the Fremen. If you look at the Fremen, you look at that little blue symbol. Now look at the Mentat space, and you see that little 2 is the symbol. It's going to say influence. Yeah. It's just too far away to see, but that one, and the same thing with. Not so we have one for every faction now, don't we? Do we not have one for the Bene Gesserit? Maybe we don't have.
Well, the Bene Gesserit offer the infiltration, so they arguably you don't need one for that. That is their thing.
That's fair.
If it infiltrates, that's their gimmick. So, no, I hadn't spotted that actually. It's not a bad shout actually. It's a good spot.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on here. I think that now players are going to have to pick their lines a little bit more. When you go like, okay, well, I'm setting up for Mentat. I don't have to worry about so-and-so taking Mentat away from me. They're not set up for it. You know?
I'm not even sure it's an actual Mentat, actually. I don't think it is. It's more of you pay to like trash an intrigue, draw another one, and draw a card. I think there's
a Mentat symbol there. I think it's hard to see, but it's right below the trash and intrigue, and then it draws a card. I think it still does that.
I mean, it might be. It's got to be worth more than two Solari, though, then, because that's pretty good value for that drawing, trashing and drawing an intrigue is deceptively good. I know that from my time, you know, with our trip, you know, everyone, a lot of people like hitting it on the Talaxu track, or homebrew stuff as well. We've delved into that a bit too, so.
Absolutely.
So it might well be, and I was going to say, like, not having the Mentat would be, feels kind of crazy. But I mean,
it's got to be a Mentat. I mean, that was one of the most innovative things I think about original base Dune, is that having a space that lets you skip turn order is really clever.
Yeah.
We've seen it. It's in other games, but it's not.
Paying for a stall, you know, and that can be really effective. And it's not. And the thing is, and obviously, I like using Mentat a lot, and people on the stream will know that. But it's cool because it's not just the immediate benefit; it's what the follow-on effects of suddenly you were first act, now you're last act, and that has an interesting effect on how things act sometimes, especially in the combat space specifically. That can really mess with people, so I would imagine that would stay there for sure.
We're gonna have to wrap this up. We've been talking for a long time about it, and I wanted to keep this to at least an hour and a half excuse me. There's one thing I wanted to mention. I brought it up in my first look. There's this little white cube sitting next to the first player token and the little wall token. What is that? Like, really? What? There's a white cube. Nothing else is white in this game, right? We don't have white cubes just hanging out. It's not the 3v3 player token cubes or anything like that. Those are the bottom there. What the heck is that?
Maybe someone was like putting some sugar in their tea and like they missed the cube and it fell into shot. That's but be my guess. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea why you would require one troop cube, because that's what it is. It's a troop style cube, one being white, and that is it. I don't have any idea what that's about.
Bizarre. It's a marker of something. I mean, it might be something else.
Really but... does wonder. I mean, it's not an error. Like, it's there deliberately, but what that could be is anyone's guess. I think this, again, might be something specific. Well, I thought it would be for the 3v3, but then you'd have it for the 3v3 stuff, so maybe not. I don't know. my only other guess is this has got something to do with that the orange space below where the Mentat used to be. Maybe you spend X amount and you get this cube, and this cube lets you do something unusual. Maybe it's like a troop you can get and like you can reuse. Because I think that was one nice thing I'll give for Rise of Ix is with the Dreadnoughts, the fact that if you lose, you can reuse the Dreadnoughts, I think was nice. It kind of rewarded that kind of long-term investment stuff, and it would be sad to see that go, because the worms, you're not going to be able to put a worm in your garrison, kids. That's not how that stuff works.
They don't fit there, no.
No, not really. So I have a feeling maybe it's got something to do with that, but why there's only one, I don't know. It's very hard to say. I think we would just be guessing at this point. We'll find out more later on down the line. Maybe this is another sort of side mechanic that we're yet to be introduced here. Is very possible. But who knows? We shall see indeed. But I think on the whole, this is... Yeah, there's a lot to look forward to. I think this is going to be... I think for a lot of us that have played a lot of Dune Imperium, this is going to be generally a pretty refreshing experience. It's going to have a bit of a callback to the old days, which isn't a bad thing by any stretch of imagination. I think there's stuff being introduced which is going to be good, some of which we've guessed. I don't know how much of it would be right. You know, if Paul Down sends us an email saying, what's your source? Then we'll know we were pretty close to the mark.
We don't have one.
And, well, he doesn't know that I don't have one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you see, this social media exile. You know, I was gone for a few days. That didn't mean I was doing nothing for those few days. You know, I've got my places now. So we'll see. But I think, yeah, there's a lot to look forward to. We've got a while to wait. I've been hearing this might not be up till like Christmas, which is, you know, a fair distance away. I think this will be good when it gets out. Our digital team, we'll say, might be pretty busy in a few months, or might find themselves to be pretty busy in a few months. But that's beyond the scope of my official knowledge of anything going on. I think even just physically, I think the one thing it's going to do as well is like this board, the box just looks fantastic. Going back to this, I think it's going to do a big job, like physically. I think people are going to see it's like, and I just feel like something like this and just the art, it just, to me, like it just stands out a bit more. That's not to say the base board, the base box is terrible, any stretch of motion, it's totally fine. But this is like a piece of art, really, on the front of this box. And I think that standing up in a store, people are going to look at it and think, ooh, that looks pretty good. And I think that would definitely help. So I think the art team, by the looks of it, have done themselves a great job here.
I hope it's a card. I hope that there's a card that gives you like a point or something. I don't know. Maybe it's like some sort of worm card that's just new and it has that art on it. I really want to see that in action.
It might be that's the new Spicer's Flow card. Although,
oh, good, that's a good one. Yeah,
it's a possible shout. Although, like say, those folks on top of that damn thing, you need to calm down. It's not safe up there. You really
need to calm down.
You really need to not do that. Like it's a bit unnecessary. But whatever else, got to get the action shot in. So yeah, hopefully this will be good. Hopefully we get our check from Paul in the mail in the next couple of weeks. and we will come back to this obviously as time goes. We will get info on more information that gets released, obviously with the Direwolf circulars. We'll get more of an idea of the mechanics that are going to be brought into this, the contract stuff, which you know, the spy stuff and bits and pieces as well, and we'll see what will come to this. But there's, as I say, a lot to look forward to, and I think it will be a refreshing experience for folks that have played a lot of Dune. And if you just casually played it on the side, I think it's going to introduce enough stuff to keep things interesting, but it's not going to... I don't think it's going to be overwhelming. And that's the one thing I think of, again, with Immortality, when it came out, I felt like with everything going on, you could get overwhelmed. This doesn't strike me as you could get overwhelmed, but you're not going to be bored, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's going to do it for us for now. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time on the next... Spy Satellites. Take care, everybody.